Hello and welcome to the Linux Lads. As always, my name is Shane.
My name is Connor.
And my name is Mike.
And we have a wonderful show as usual. First off, Connor, you were trying out Android Q beta, is it?
Yeah. When I was watching the Google I/O, and they said Android Q beta is available for all of these phones and whatever, and I was like, I recognize that logo. That is the manufacturer of my phone, which is the Essential phone, which is actually quite surprising considering that they're no longer making it, and you would think that the company would be kaput right now, but no, apparently they're doing the Android Q beta, and I've sort of been trying it out. It's quite interesting, and I actually noticed a marked improvement in my battery life, so I don't know if it's specific down to this beta, and in the full release would it be different, but currently on this beta I'm getting consistently a day and a half to 2 days where I was probably hovering around the kind of day and a bit, as in I might end the day at about 30 to 40% battery. Usually now I find myself ending the day at, like, depending on my usage, between 50 and 60%, even 70% on a really light use day. So it's like, I don't have to plug in my phone at the end of the day. I could go into another day. So consistently a day and a half to 2 days battery life, which is quite good.
Yeah, that's nice. I'd be interested to try it out myself. Mike, you're back with us.
Yeah.
And contrary to what we said last time, you were freezing your balls off in Central Europe, not sunning your arse in Spain.
Yeah, despite the difference in temperatures, it was actually a nice trip. I mean, for me, that's a family visit, so I went to Vietnam.
It was fake news.
Yeah, it was literally fake news. Yeah, I went to Vienna, I went to Prague, and you know, we've seen a few museums. Went to the zoo as I recently started doing. So it was a good trip, and now I'm all relaxed and back and ready to get back into the grind.
Fantastic. Yeah, as you guys know, Mark kindly stepped in last week or 2 weeks ago.
Last episode,
exactly. So coming up today, we've got a few news stories, some kind of important news in the Linux world, with a very kind of political angle to it, but we'll get into that, I suppose. Then we've got a little announcement later, which is not a secret at all. You guys already know it. And we'll have a little chat about that. But first up, we have a coupon code for 30% off when you pay for 3 months of a Zyre VPN, a security-focused VPN provider based in Sweden, where the law doesn't require them to log traffic. They operate servers in Europe and North America. Their servers are owned, not rented, installed on location by their own engineers and running Debian Linux. They provide a WireGuard and OpenVPN option as well. Their client is GPL version 2 licensed, and it's available on Linux. They take all major payment methods, including some cryptocurrencies, and you don't even have to give them your email address. So use the code LINUXLADS when ordering. Be sure to hit the green add code button to make sure the discount applies, and that's valid until 1st of January 2020. So, first up, this is a really big one. You added this in, Connor. The South Korean government might switch to Linux. They might pull a Munich. So we'll see how well this goes. That's very interesting. I haven't read much about this though, so I don't know much about, like, the timeline or what version of Linux they're using, or if they're gonna, like, contract somebody else to do it or try to do it themselves. Yeah.
I think it's all speculation at this stage. I probably know about as much as you do. We have the articles that we've read in the show notes. It seems to be that the And some people have speculated that they might be doing this as a way of getting kind of a better deal from Microsoft, as in, we might switch to something else. Hey guys, kind of give us a better deal here. So there is that speculation, or they could be committed and even if Microsoft come around with their better deals and everything, and they might say, no, we're committed to this change. hopefully they don't pull Munich. So for clarification, Munich, what they did was they got their own in-house IT team to develop their own distribution of Linux. Ideally, what they should do is just go to a major Linux company and go to Canonical, go to Red Hat, go to SUSE or someone and just say, listen, we have X number of thousand computers, whatever it is. We were willing to give you an enterprise contract, pay for enterprise support. So they have a phone line to yell down the phone at if something goes wrong. They have a point of contact, and that's the way they should do. They should go to Red Hat. They should go to Canonical. They should go to OpenSUSE or SUSE or someone like that, and just say, listen, we're employing you to roll this out on our enterprise network.
I suppose that's a smart way to do it on our
workstations, and we're paying you, and if anything goes wrong, you're the guys who rolled it out, so you're the guys who are going to support it. And that's the way it should be, rather than their own in-house IT team, because if it was reliant on their own in-house IT team, then there could be security updates, there could be kernel updates, there could be anything like that, and it's their own IT team which is tasked with the regular IT tasks such as friggin' printers and all that malarkey. So ideally, get an enterprise contract with one of those big three, Red Hat, Canonical or SUSE or someone like that.
Yeah, it remains to be seen who they actually go with, or what distro they even use or anything. But so apparently this is, you could be right on the whole Windows 7 thing. You mentioned that, reading here in the article, they said with 2020 bringing the end of inverted commas free support for Windows 7. So it could be a financial choice for them. But further down, it does say that the Switch will cost them $655 million in US. So, you know, I'm wondering what the cost of rolling out Windows 7 post 2020 is, or whatever version of Windows there is at the time that they end up using. But like, Jesus, yeah, that's a lot of money. Like, so I dread to imagine what Windows is going to cost them. Mike, have you followed this
at
all?
I think what they are worried about when it comes to upgrading Windows to Windows 10 would be that they would also have to upgrade the hardware that they have. Whereas with Linux, I assume at least some of the hardware would be still usable, because the system requirements of Linux distributions are generally smaller than the ones of Windows. And just back to Munich a little bit, it wasn't the wisest decision to roll their own, but they also sustained pressure from Microsoft because Microsoft didn't like what they did. So they sustained pressure from Microsoft for a lot of years, and it took a change in their local politics. The mayor had to be replaced with one that is favorable to Microsoft, and it took Microsoft to build a headquarters in Munich or near Munich for them to switch back to Windows. So if this keeps happening around the world, there's only so many headquarters that Microsoft can build in the world. So, and I'm not obviously even blaming Microsoft, because they do what any company would do. They have to look after their business interests. But it is something that the politicians in South Korea, whoever they are, would have to be prepared for. Whatever changes they make, there is always going to be a commercial pressure on them to answer for any and all possible small or big problems with the solution they chose. If going with Microsoft would be a comfortable choice for them, because no one ever has gotten fired for it. At least that's the, you know, the cliche and the ageless wisdom. But if they do go with Linux, that they will have to be prepared for some pressure from people who might not necessarily like the decision for whatever motives they might have.
Yeah, I'm just, my heart goes out to the people, just like the civil servants in Munich and in Korea who have to go through all this shit. Like, because I know, like, we all know from experience, if we've ever done an office job, that like major IT changes tend to be a bit of a ball ache. So just the people, just the little someone working in, I don't know, the Ministry of Feckin' Tax or something in Seoul is probably like, they're probably like, oh, bloody hell, we have to switch. And like, then if it turns out that it was a negotiating tactic and they're switching back to Windows then in a few years' time, like, that must be really annoying, like, just on a personal level. You know, having to learn a whole new system, and, you know, because we're just talking about normal office workers here. They don't have, like, I'm sure most of them don't have a bloody clue about Linux, if they're not that way inclined. So, yeah, that's the kind of one thing that sticks out for me, just the personal element of, like, oh, fuck's sake, you're reflashing all our computers all over again. Next up, big political news. Huawei blacklisted for business with US companies. That was bad grammar. So yeah, Trump banned US companies from doing business with Chinese phone manufacturers. I believe that was like banned American telecoms providers from purchasing equipment from foreign companies, something like that.
Completely doing business. So if you are Qualcomm, it depends on representation. So the big companies will go to their lawyers and say, what does it mean to us? And the lawyers, after reading and charging a lot of money, will point out the course of action. And the course of action, at least when in many big companies like Google and Qualcomm, seems to be, no, you cannot do any business with Huawei at this point whatsoever, or at this point when it becomes effective in, I think, August or something like that. So that means, and companies that are not necessarily based in US, and associations that are not necessarily fully based in US, are also looking into it and just not letting Huawei into their business anymore. So that goes from ARM to carriers to the Wi-Fi Alliance to chip makers. You know, it's a massive revolution it's a massive upheaval of the status quo, because Huawei was one of the, or if not the biggest mobile phone manufacturer in the world.
Number two
after Samsung.
Yeah.
So that's a massive upheaval.
That's crazy. And like, Huawei only really broke into the Western market in the last few years, I guess, because like I didn't really see any of those phones.
In terms of handsets, but in terms of network infrastructure, they've been here for at least a decade.
The plug-in modems, the kind of small stuff that you get from your operator, or the big stuff that the operator uses to build networks, that's been here for a long time.
Yeah, I suppose the big takeaway for us here though is the OS that they want to create instead. So, because they want to break ties with Android, or kind of the situation has forced them to, I guess.
They don't want to. They would love nothing more if they could just keep the things as they are, because we don't know much about the new operating system. As far as everybody is speculating, the system is nowhere near ready. The apps might not be there. Now, there's obviously two ecosystems. One is in China, where they cannot use Google stuff anyway. I mean, like Play Store and the Play services, because they are blocked in there. So that's a different market. But if they want to keep on selling phones all over the world without Play Store access and without the services, they have to provide a really good alternative. And as far as anybody's guessing, they are not quite there.
Yeah, it's easier said than done, I suppose. Connor, you added this. Have you been following this at all?
I have been following as the news has been coming out. So the news has been coming out, and then there's like, oh, there's another thing, and then there's another thing, and then there's another thing. So so in case anyone has been living under a rock and is completely unaware of this, I'll break down my understanding of it. Is at first it was the software, so people like Google with their Play services and things like that, and obviously access to Google Android as well. They would have access to the open source project AOSP, but so it came out that that, oh, it's the Google software and they won't be able to have access to upgrade their phones to the latest version of Android if they're on a previous version. So as far as I'm aware, if you have a Huawei handset at the moment, that operating system will still work. You'll still have access to the Play Store for at least the next 90 days until August, possibly longer. It's just the case, and Huawei will still be able to issue security updates if there's any security vulnerabilities, because they still have access to the Android open source project, so they can still code their own security patches and so on for that version that's running on your phone. You just won't have access to an upgrade to the next version of Android, so whatever version of Android that is on, it's stuck, it's static. As far as that's concerned, I mean, Huawei's could have their own custom version of the Android open source project. When that new base that Google releases, they can take that and they can do their own customizations on top of it and then release that as an upgrade for your phone. But you would have lose access to the Play Store and the official Google version of, air quotes, Google version of Android. But
so that's basically the Norway model of AOSP, isn't it?
but then freaking the ARM news and the Wi-Fi Alliance news, which you've only just heard about the Wi-Fi Alliance thing today. The ARM news I knew for a couple of days, but the ARM news is complete and utter friggin' hammer blow, because that just means that ARM are a UK-based company, and what they do is, for people who are unfamiliar again, I'll try to break it down as much as I can, is they develop the chip architecture, and they have designs, and then people buy the license to those designs and then go out and manufacture them. So ARM themselves don't really manufacture any chips, bar a few reference chips. Like, we're talking about maybe less than 1,000 is something that they would, or possibly even in the hundreds of reference designs that they'll manufacture themselves. But other than that, it'll go out to people like Samsung or Qualcomm, and they will make their chips based on ARM's designs. ARM are effectively saying, well, even though we're a UK-based company, we're using some US technologies. So because we're using some US technologies, we're going to obey this blacklist. And so that means that Huawei do manufacture their own ARM chips, just like Samsung do. So Huawei, for their next... anything that's in development at the moment in terms of their next chip are essentially up Schitt's Creek, because they don't have the license to manufacture new chips.
You actually mentioned something there that I found interesting that I had never considered before. So because of this ban, the Android updates, like the OTA updates, so if you're on an American carrier, say you're on Verizon or something like that, like, you won't actually be able to get updates for your phone after a certain time. Is that correct?
If it's pushed through the carrier, as far as I'm aware, that would be correct. The manufacturer may, which in this case would be Huawei, could bypass that and push the updates themselves. I think Google has been trying to do that with Android, try to take it away from the carrier to make sure. Obviously, if the carrier is a bit lazy with issuing security updates, which it looks bad for Google, because people are saying, I have this phone that hasn't been updated for 6 months. So Google is now saying, okay, we're going to... So the Google has been trying to get around that, try to take the carrier out of it. So if Google is able to get around the carrier, then I would imagine the OEM, just like Huawei, should be able to get around and should be able to push their own updates. But it just won't be an official Google, air quotes, update, because they don't have access to that software. They'll just have to wait until the... open source version of what Android Q or the next version of Android comes out, and then base their operating system on that, and then issue their own version of it, of or their own new update for the phone. It just won't be air quotes Google Android.
Because I remember when I had a Samsung phone, the Android updates were always later than everyone else because Samsung took the latest version of Android and, you know, Samsungified it and added all that shit you never use, like, because Samsung phones are ridiculous for bloatware. At least they were when I had one. But like, I can imagine. Yeah, I don't. Perhaps it won't have as much of an effect as you'd think, because they can just, you know, the only stumbling block I can see is perhaps like, you know, firmware updates for the actual hardware in the phone. That there might be issues there.
Well, it might not have that much effect on people who already bought one, but if you are buying a phone today in Europe or in the US, I think people are quite unlikely to buy Huawei because, you know, should you, for example, in future lose access to Play services, that's your Play Store gone, your apps, your maps gone, all the stuff that most people use, even third-party applications use Play services, some of them, and so this might be pretty much a nail in the coffin of Huawei in the Western world, or it might not, because like one of the news that came out yesterday is that Trump is considering that Huawei, or very dangerous Huawei as he called them, might be a part of some kind of a trade deal. So he's basically taking them hostage in his weird negotiations with China, or whatever this war, not war, deal, no deal kind of thing is. So it's, to me, the most important news from all of this is how vulnerable the Android system is, or any, how vulnerable our pretty much whole mobile phone ecosystem is to the problems of capitalism and to nationalist interests. Like, if one country can basically at least try and seriously hurt the second biggest manufacturer of mobile phones in the world, that's not okay. And if one company, i.e. Google, can be pushed by the government into breaking ties with this company and can basically switch off some of the most important parts of its operating system just because the administration in one country wants it, that's not good. We need something a bit more open source. We need an open standard that is truly international, with no national oversight on it, a trade on organization, something like the Linux Foundation, preferably not based in the United States, that would oversee a mobile phone base.
I suppose we already have stuff like that for the internet. We have, you know, ICANN, which is an international body regulating domain names. You have, the WWW consortium, or the W3C, whatever you want to call it. Those are all transnational, international, whatever you want to call it, bodies. So yeah, you're right. Like there isn't such a thing for the mobile world.
Well, we have this base for servers, right? We have or at least we have the kernel that runs even on the mobile phones and everything. What is needed is some kind of a second layer that all the manufacturers could use. Nobody would, and it would not, you know, not user space, but something between the kernel and the and user space that would be that everybody could use and freely contribute to, and then the manufacturers could put their all modifications on top of it. So I think that's badly needed. There should not be a single company and a single nation that just dictates to everybody what the market is going to be.
I'm not saying that the access to the Google services is, I don't wish to understate that effect. I'm not saying that won't be a massive blow to them. It will be a massive blow to them, but I would imagine a company the size of Huawei would be able to weather that storm. they'd be able to survive afterwards. I think the arm news, the lack of access to the license to print chips is a fucking hammer blow and a half, to be perfectly blunt, because software, sure, it could set you back 2 to 3 years while you develop your own operating system or whatever, but access to freaking hardware could set you back 5-10 years.
No, yeah, you're right. I definitely see that point. And given that the two other chipset manufacturers, even if they had mobile phone ready chips, i.e. Intel and AMD, are also US based, I don't think there is a way out from Huawei unless they have got a plan B for chips as well. I don't know the licensing agreement they have with ARM. I don't know if they have to stop using ARM or the blueprints for the chips, or if they can build upon them, or if they paid for what they have and they can build upon it, or if they would have to go smash everything and start completely anew. I don't know. Maybe they should go to RISC-V.
Oh, I was just going to say that RISC-V is open hardware. I think the whatever foundation or whatever is the organization is behind it might be US based. But that is idle speculation off the top of my head. But even then, it shouldn't really matter if it is open hardware. So effectively, they could do whatever they want if it is based on RISC-V. But if they would not be able to, hardware iteration is not that quick. Even if they had something in the plan B or plan C based on a RISC-V somewhere in the works, it could take them at least 5 to 10 years to freaking ramp that up to production level.
Yeah, I just researched that their RISC-V were started in the CS department at the University of California, Berkeley.
Yeah, so that speculation was right. But yeah, even if the foundation is US based, as I said, it's open hardware, so the politics of that shouldn't necessarily affect RISC-V because of the openness, just like the fact that they're free to use the Android open source project because it's open source. Google don't have control over that, or Trump doesn't have control over that. So it's open, they can use it, but it would take quite a few years for them to pivot over to that.
Well, as always, the solution is to open source everything.
Be very interesting to see how this pans out and see what sort of effect it has on the mobile industry, because I think it will have quite a significant impact. One that we like or don't like, I'm not sure, to be honest, but yeah.
And this is all purely just speculation because nothing has been announced yet, but it's Huawei is the only Chinese company that's been blacklisted, but there's plenty of other Chinese companies that a lot of us use. I mean, OnePlus are Chinese company, Lenovo, freaking the people manufacturers of the ThinkPads, they're Chinese. Hopefully none of those are affected, but hopefully it's just limited to Huawei. But you never know what Trump and his freaking Mad Hatter freaking power drive, he might add more people to the blacklist. Which would be fucking nuts, because it would literally turn the entire IT industry to complete another shambles that could take years to recover. I mean, on an industry scale.
Let's call a spade here. Like, Huawei is not exactly a victim here either. Like,
oh no, yeah.
they've most definitely got their part to play in this. And no, the Chinese government, you know.
They are accused of spying and everything, but this is the problem with the whole thing. There is no courts. There is one person, albeit the most, arguably one of the most powerful people on the planet, but one person says, well, I don't like these people. And the business goes. Like, that's not, you know, if if we are okay, if we were to do this properly, then Huawei, there would be some kind of a court, not an Asian-based court, something above that level, that would decide, investigate what happened, and they would be capable of doing business until proven guilty, right? Not none of this, oh, I want to start a war today, so I'm just gonna spread the shit this way. And maybe tomorrow I just press this button. You know, it's annoying. It shouldn't be. And there's a ton of people who are working for Huawei all over the world who live their life, who have got now lost some part of their security because they wake up every morning thinking, well, maybe in a year's time I won't have a job. You know, because this could damage them. I know they are big and everything, but this could damage them. If it goes on forever, they lose a lot of business. Or if the Chinese government, for example, decides to throw them under the bus for the sake of deal with Trump or whatever, you know, it's not a good place to be. And I don't think this is fair. Obviously, it's politics, so nobody says it would be fair. But it's not the way it should be done.
Yeah, and it's really indicative of the difference between the US and the UK. Like in the US, it's like a ban, you know, an executive order. There you go. Whereas in the UK, it's a little bit more subtle. You know, there was inquiries and stuff like that in the government. So, yeah.
Another example, admittedly, there is a smaller company than Huawei. Huawei's a massive company, as we've said, number two in the world, was ZTE was on the Trump's naughty step for a while, and it very nearly killed the company. Apparently they're no longer on the naughty step, so I think they're on the way to recovery, but it very nearly killed the company because Huawei manufactured their own chips, but ZTE were almost entirely reliant on Qualcomm for their chips.
So if say Trump decides to ban everything Chinese, what are we meant to use? Like, what is not actually coming from there? Even if he decides to, what if he decided to ban Foxconn, right? That's not only Chinese manufacturers mobile phones, that's also Apple gone and everybody else. So he's damaging a market without, and even if we like not talk, even if we leave the point that that is not a fair or just thing to do, also there are no alternatives. This kind of damage, this also damages customers. So Huawei sells a lot of phones in Eastern and Central Europe because they are cheap and good for the price, right? If that goes away, who's going to step in and fill that niche? Or are people just meant to spend the extra 500 or 1,000 euro to buy themselves a phone that's not completely crap? It's all bad.
Yeah, it's too heavy-handed for sure. That's fucking Trump's signature, isn't it? But it's just too heavy-handed. It's too disruptive. Huawei have questions to answer. No, like there's no doubt about that. But as you said, it's disruptive. It's affecting. You know, it's not the right way to go about it for sure.
This is entirely a rumor, and I don't think anything has actually happened yet. I've certainly seen no headlines, but I've strong speculation that if Trump is saying, oh, Huawei are bad, we're banning Huawei, and the Chinese government are going to go, right, well, we're banning Apple.
Well, that's... but then... Yeah, no, this kind of tactics only ever hurt the people. Anyway, I think I've ranted enough, but yeah, no, it's a shit show. That's what it is.
Yeah, I think maybe we'll move on to something else because you know, there's a lot of aspects of this story that just make my blood boil a little bit. Mike, you stuck in Firefox 67 is out, so that's a nice story, isn't it?
Good news, finally. Yeah. it's another iteration of the world's best browser. Yes, I said that. It's.
You're right, though.
Yeah.
Yes, it is the world's best browser because everything else is just the other browser. No, that's not true. That's unfair to the other projects, obviously. But Mozilla Firefox has got version 67 out. According to them, it's meant to be faster. There's a new version of some audio-video codec that I don't know anything about because I don't understand that shit. But it's meant to be also better for your video playback. It might be why Shane is capable of connecting to Hangouts in Firefox. As he pointed out, because it wasn't possible before, and now it works. So maybe next time I'll try that as well myself, rather than using the Chrome browser, which is what I'm using now. I don't know if that's. I've never noticed this before, but when I upgraded to Firefox 67, I got split view. So you can basically now click a button, select a tab, and you have got two web pages. Side by side in one window. That's amazing. That I think should have been there for a long time, because if you are researching anything, this is my favorite feature of the whole thing. At this moment you can't really resize it, so one of them is significantly smaller and it kind of defaults on many websites to a mobile phone website. But this is like this is Mozilla using something for the researchers. I don't know actually if it was, just coming to think about it, it might not have been built into Firefox 67. It might be that Firefox 67 started recommending add-ons for me, and I could have recommended this one. And I installed it, and now it works that way. Well, I've just dug myself into a hole here. Anyway, other improvements are to the dark mode, apparently, which I don't use. Connor, you've used it. Did you notice any improvements to dark mode?
I'm on the full disclaimer. I'm on the 68 beta, and as you were talking, I was clicking around, and I didn't see the split tab functionality. But it could be just something that blatantly obvious that I'm missing. But in relation to your point, I do use a dark theme in Firefox, and I haven't really noticed, even though I'm on 68 beta, and apparently I'm on the version that's after this announcement, the newer version, I haven't really noticed any real improvement in terms of for me, ultimate Firefox, where it falls down when it comes to a dark theme is when you're on a website that has any kind of web form where you're filling in information.
Yes.
If you have a dark theme, it completely messes that up. Either it'll make the background of the box that you're filling in text black, and you're filling in black text on top of that, or as I've found out a couple of times, is it will make the text white and the background color is white. So literally I have to highlight the box to make sure that what I've typed in is actually what I think I've typed in. And I'm on 68 beta, and as far as I'm aware, they've not fixed that yet. So when they say they've improved dark theme support, it might not be that specific web form bug thing that seems to still be an issue in 68 beta.
I think what they kind of said, that if Firefox is in the dark theme and the website has got a dark theme, the Firefox will now be able to automatically select the dark theme, if I'm not mistaken. I'm making this up completely. But I don't use dark theme, so I can't really test it. But actually, that's not true. On the Pinebook, because of residual configuration from a desktop environment that got deleted, there is the Firefox, basically, even in i3, is still in dark theme mode. And I did notice that on a specific form, exactly that happened, that I couldn't see what I was typing because it was black on black. So, yeah. I think that's
a fairly common complaint with any sort of dark theme. I enabled the dark window theme in Ubuntu, and I do notice that sometimes.
It's quite annoying. I will admit that in the past it's annoyed me enough that I've freaking switched over to a secondary browser that is for just that specific web form. to another browser that's based off Chromium, like Brave or Chromium or Opera or Vivaldi or one of those that's based off Chromium, just for that specific web URL. I've switched to a second browser. Like, this just annoying me so much, I just have to freaking switch to something else. But then I want Firefox to succeed. I want Firefox to be my main browser, and for the most part, bar that an annoying thing, it is. And I'm gunning for them. That's where my moralities lie, as I want Firefox to succeed, because it's an open source browser. That is not, there are other open source browsers, but they're based off of Chromium web engine, and Firefox is doing its own thing. I don't want the monopoly of web engines, so I want Firefox to succeed. But seriously, Mozilla, fix that fucking bug.
I'm in the same camp. Like Firefox would have to get really, really bad for me to stop using it, because, as you say, it's a philosophical choice. It's not a usability choice. There are faster browsers than Firefox, I'm sorry to say, but speed isn't really all that important. Like, what's a few extra milliseconds? Like, so I don't really care about that shit, because, you know, obviously it's philosophically aligned with my thoughts on technology and software and everything. So yeah, I mean, it would have to get damn near unusable for me to switch to anything else. So, you know, I'm just kind of every update, I'm like hoping, please make it good, because I'm going to have to use it anyway.
For me, it's a pragmatic choice as well, in that if we stop using Firefox, and should Firefox die, there will be one choice exactly. And that's bad. That's like objectively a bad situation to be in. So by supporting it, we are kind of future-proofing ourselves we are future-proofing ourselves. But having said that, I mean, Firefox is not bad. I have to use, for some stuff, I have to use Google Chrome, because there is that kind of perverted IE6 situation where certain developers of like business apps only develop for Chrome, and because it's so poorly developed, it only works in Chrome. And I don't see that much difference between Firefox and Chrome in speed. It's pretty much the same. Maybe they need to make some more improvements to rendering, but if you compare the company the size of Google and an organization, albeit Mozilla, which is fairly big, but if you compare the browsers, to me they are pretty much the same level of quality, and it's an amazing effort from Mozilla that they keep Firefox this good, they are keeping on improving it, and they continue.
Yeah, I mean, in my own experience, having tried Edge and Brave as well, I've noticed they're quite fast. Like, Edge is surprisingly fast. And it's noticeable. Like, you'll see, go to YouTube, for instance, that's always a slow loader. So yeah, you go to YouTube on Brave or Edge, and you'll see a page render kind of on Firefox, and you'll see it rendering, you know, do 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 do. It'd be 1, 2, 3, 4. On Brave or Edge, it will just appear. Like, right there. It's a noticeable improvement.
Point of clarification, Edge is not yet based on Chromium. I think it's on their development or beta channel, so unless you downloaded that specific version, which I think you alluded to with the Linus video earlier, was he's doing his testing on, I think it was either the dev or the beta.
Since I used Edge now, but this is just my experience at the time.
Yeah, so it's not based on Chromium. No,
it was just like the reworked Internet Explorer at the time. Okay, next story. Mike, you put this in. Antergos Linux project ends, unfortunately. So Antergos is no more after 7 years.
This is sad news. The developers basically don't have any more time for developing it. Antergos obviously being the Arch Linux based general desktop Linux distribution. I've tried it several times in the past. It was good. that's, you know, it was good choices for desktop environments, good usability. I always rated it in one of the top, let's say top 6, top 5 distributions for me. And it is sad that they don't have the time, but they are shutting down nicely. They let the people who use it. They will. There is a migration way where they switch off the repos back to Arch, and it should be at least as envisaged. It should be all smooth transition to plain Arch. Obviously, people's lives change, and if they can't carry on, at least they are doing it the right way. They, you know, they didn't just turn everything off from one day to another, and there is a plan. So people who use it, people who use Antergos will basically transition to Arch. If they don't like that, there are alternatives for the other Arch-based distributions, basically, that they can use. There's some kind of a list going to be in the show notes.
As you said, it's always sad to see a good OS kind of shut up shop, but as you said, like the transition is very considered and very smooth. So I have absolutely no doubt that this will be forked in some fashion. I think it's that kind of project. I think a lot of people really liked it, so I can definitely see it being forked for sure.
Yeah, this gets our sad trombone. Full disclaimer, I'm running Antergos on both my desktop computer that we're doing this podcast on and on my laptop. So when I found this out, I was like, oh shit, what the hell is going to happen here? But I'm glad that there is a nice smooth transition path, as in just keep doing your updates and eventually you'll just point to back to vanilla Arch. I'm not saying that they were that removed from vanilla Arch. Anyway, they just had their own one or two of their own repos, but they'll just gradually turn off those repos and then say, okay, these packages will point this in this direction now. So when you do your usual updates, you'll just get it directly from Arch. So it's the case of relax. If you have it and install at the moment, it won't be broken. It will all be smooth, seamless in the background. And as Shane was saying, I'm sure there will be some kind of fork that is will try to continue on the philosophy of it. They may even keep the same name. I don't know what kind of friggin' red tape or bureaucracy or anything like that is. Maybe somebody will just say, well, we're taking over the project, we're continuing it, just like the community took over the Solus project. So it is possible they kept the same name. It is possible for the community to take over.
Yeah, I was thinking that myself. I was like, a fork. My mind was solely focused on forking, but then it was like, sure, they could just get a new maintainer. Like that would be cool.
There is the question of the community. There's always been a very welcoming and helpful community in Antergos. You know, welcoming to newbies and seasoned veterans alike, and it was always a good place to go to. And I think the current maintainers are saying they are going to be shutting down the forums and the wiki. Maybe they basically say they don't anticipate keeping the forum and wiki operational for more than 3 months. So these people who formed a community around those two web services, they will probably have to move somewhere. Maybe they could I don't know if they are going to be assimilated into Arch or if they are going to create their own, but it would be nice to preserve this nice community of people that Antergos has always had.
I mean, I suppose the spiritual successor would be Manjaro. Would that be correct to say?
It's slightly different. So Antergos was always sailing very close to the Arch wind, if you are in for a bad metaphor. They basically took whatever Arch produced, edit some of their repos, and it was the same kind of, so what you got in Arch, you had in Antergos. pretty much, if I understand it correctly. Manjaro has got kind of a buffer, so they do a bit more testing. They try to make the, they try to soften the kind of harsh rolling release environment for people. So so Arch releases something, Manjaro tests it, adjusts it needs if it needs, and then releases it some point later. That's not to say that it's not very similar. It's still Arch based. The many of the philosophies are still there, and still the, you know, the community in Manjaro, again, a very nice community. There are other alternatives based on Arch. I think Connor was very helpful in researching it. So there's Archbank, there's Artix, there's Chakra, which I don't think is based on Arch anymore, but it's close to that paradigm. There's Parabola. They all have got kind of niches, right? So Parabola is for free software lovers. It's a bit like
PureOS, and there's, isn't there Triskel as well?
It's like those basically FSF kind of people. Archbank is prides themselves on being lightweight. They use OpenBox as their Windows manager.
I used to use Archbank. I quite liked it.
Yeah, there is a lot of to be said for a snappy Arch based distros are generally fast, in my experience, at least. I've not tested it, but that's my use experience. And if you put a lightweight desktop, and not even a desktop environment, if you put a lightweight windowing system on top of it and make it all work nicely, that's one snappy distro. You know, they have got there's an alternative for people who don't like systemd called Artix that has got some kind of a different init system. I think there's like Black Arch, which is a pen testing distro. So there are many alternatives. Most of them seems to be specific for some kind of a use case. I see your point that Manjaro is the kind of general distribution, because Manjaro has got plenty of different desktop environments for plenty of architectures. For example, so I can run it on my desktop at work, I can run it on my Pinebook with different configurations for each machine. So maybe you're probably right, Manjaro is kind of in the same general computing distribution for users space as Antergos was.
One point of clarification is, I would imagine that some people could, if nobody takes up the Antergos, like if the community don't take over and no fork happens, nobody else fills that niche, I would imagine that there'll be a split in the community. Some people liked the fact that it was very close to Arch and like, well, I might as well just switch over to fill in the Arch. And some might like the fact that Antergos had a nice GUI installer and just click, 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 and oh, I want to run KDE, click, or oh, I want to run GNOME, click, oh, I want to run XFCE, click, and then it downloads that kind of nice installer, which Manjaro doesn't have it in the installer, but I think it has the various different flavors that you can download. So part of the community could go in one direction, part of the community could go in the other direction. But the way I describe it is, if using Debian as a base, as an example, and Antergos was kind of like something that's based very closely off Debian. For example, Linux Mint Debian Edition, or there's Sparky Linux and a few others that are based based off Debian with a few niceties on top of it. Whereas Manjaro isn't quite as far removed from Debian as Ubuntu is, but you can get the idea. It's kind of, Manjaro is a more user-friendly version based off Arch, as in they take the Arch base and then they do their own thing. They run their own, they write their own GUI tools on top. They do their own in-house development, that sort of thing. So
friendly Arch.
Yeah, friendly Arch is kind of exactly like that. So if you can imagine, Ubuntu is based off Debian, but they do a lot of their own things on top of it. Obviously, Ubuntu with Canonical has its own machine behind it, so it's not quite to the removed as Ubuntu is from Debian, but you get the idea. Manjaro is kind of, we're taking this base, but we're doing our own thing with it. It isn't a natural successor to Antigos, but some of the Antigos users might like that aspect of it and might switch over to Manjaro. And as I said, some Antigos people liked the fact that it was very closely based off Arch, and so they might say, well, I might as well just use Arch.
Yeah, I suppose I've always had that that tendency to, maybe it's just because that's where I started out, but a Debian-based distro always feels more familiar to me, and it's always something I prefer to use because I've gotten used to the package manager and stuff like that. So
you can get your apt-get on.
Exactly, yeah. So you can get your yay on if you're an Arch user.
Yeah, and for a exhaustive, for a very, very long list of both active and inactive Arch-based distributions, where else to go than to Arch Wiki? The website is going to be in the show notes. But there are so many of them that I've never heard of. Something called like Archfile, CTLOS Linux,
yeah,
Morpheus Arch.
Yeah. I'd love to go exploring in the dungeons of Linux distros and, you know, find out like all these completely fucking random distros that nobody's ever heard of, like, because there's thousands out there, and like there's probably all sorts of batshit stuff out there that would be hilarious.
This is completely off the top of my head, so this might be wildly inaccurate. I'm sure we'll look this up and put it into the show notes afterwards. I think the pen testing one might even be called Arch Attack or something like that.
There's more than one. So there is Arch Strike, previously Arch Assault.
It could have been Arch Assault.
Then there's Black Arch Linux, which is also pen testing, and I'm pretty sure there are others because the list is massive. Like that's a lot of things that I've never heard of.
Kali Linux is the go-to pen testing one, and that's based off Debian, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Well, either Debian or Ubuntu, I don't actually know.
I think it's Debian.
Yeah, I can't remember. I actually had to use a virtual machine of Kali Linux in college, for an InfoSec class, and yeah, it's super cool. I don't know what it's based off, but yeah, I just wanted to say it's cool. I think we have talked about quite a lot, so we want to let everyone know, if you guys don't already know, that we will be at FozTalk in Ooh. London on the 8th of June. So that's pretty exciting. Obviously that actually falls on a weekend where we normally record, so I'm not sure so it remains to be seen if we'll have an episode out that weekend or not, or if we'll just do the FozTalk one. We'll decide that and be sure to let everyone know, I'm sure. FozTalk, you guys, here we are.
And
nearly a year later.
If you don't get an episode that week, it just means that the FozTalk recording was so fucking terrible that we just said, no, we're not doing that, no.
Yeah, whenever Joe gets it to us, we'll be sure to get it to you.
I cannot, because I've been to FozTalks before, and I know that it's there's a lot of, let's say, drinking and general pub activities going on. I don't think we will be, even if we just got the recording immediately after on the Saturday, I don't think we'll be able to publish it on a Monday as we do usually. With show notes and everything, I'm not too sure about that.
Yeah, so don't worry, we'll keep everyone posted. Keep an eye on the Twitter, keep an eye on the Telegram group if you're there, and we'll be sure to let everyone know. But yeah, I guess we will wrap it up because we've actually had a bit of a bumper episode this week. So as you all know, we're pretty rubbish at sticking to a specific running time every week. But yeah, we just go where the episode goes. So as usual, you can support us if you go to linuxlads.com/support. So if you want to throw us a few quid for a coffee or a beer, whichever you fancy, feel free to, I believe there's a note thing on the PayPal. So if you want to even leave us a little bit of feedback that way as well, That'd be cool as well, because we really, really like feedback. You can catch up with us on Telegram. So you can get to that via the short link. That's linuxlads.com/telegram. On Twitter, we're at linuxlads. On Facebook, we're, I believe there is a short link, linuxlads.com/Facebook, but I think that's also facebook.com/linuxlads. You know, just to cover all the bases. Mastodon, I was actually informed that the short link doesn't work.
Oh,
is that true?
I didn't know that. Maybe I did.
Maybe it was when you were on holidays. But the link to Mastodon will be in the show notes anyway, if you fancy getting us there. And of course, you can email us on show@linuxlads.com. So, men, any final thoughts on this most wonderful episode?
Yeah, it was a fairly bumper episode. So, yeah.
Yeah, we're very chatty, which is unusual for a Saturday morning. So, yeah, I think if there's nothing else, we're going to wrap this shit up. Thanks for listening, as always. Hope to see you at FozTalk if you're making the trip to London. As always, reach out to us on the socials. We love to hear from you guys. We love to chat. So, yeah. I've been Shane.
I've been Connor.
And I've been Mike.
See ya.
Bye. Bye. Thank you.